From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of February, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's out of New Market, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the wild swings that happened in Chicago today based on some rumors that the Trump administration would be moving around some of the implementation points of the RFS. That's the renewable fuel standards that guide the introduction of ethanol, advanced biofuels like biodiesel, and other items into the nation's gasoline supply. We'll do that with Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, February the 28th. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Oh, Wayne, what a day it was in Chicago. Man.
Yes, it was. We spent the first few minutes of the reopen this morning wondering what in the world the news was, and then we finally got the word of the rumor of what was going on in the RFS and what was going on that way, and trying to figure out what it was actually that they were changing it to, and still a lot of confusion out there, and even the sell-off midday, of course, when supposedly one of the White House aides denied that that was happening, but we're not sure which news is fake and which is real.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different things that happened, and we'll go through some of them on this program a bit later. Scott Irwin will tell us what the rumors might mean, I suppose. But these were the rumors to begin with that came from, and I don't know, I won't call them rumors because they were a news story from Bob Dineen, who's with the RFA, the Renewable Fuels Association out of Washington, D.C., had told reporters that he was contacted by the administration saying that there were going to be some changes in the RFS, not the type that the Congress can manage, but the type that can be implemented by U.S. EPA, for instance, and the Trump administration itself, and where they might be able to establish who needs to pay for RINs. And we'll talk about those later. Also, there were some ideas that part of this deal was E15 might be pushed in a greater way by the Trump administration, and that there could also be the tax incentive for biodiesel put back into place. This is the dollar credit, and that happens pretty periodically, but I guess most of it happens on Argentine bean oil that comes into the United States, or at this time for some reason, and the Trump administration might want to make that USA tax credit only. So the market jumped, and then the Trump administration said, hey, wait a second, right? And denied the whole thing.
Well, that's what we've been heard here so far. We're not for sure what's going on. But I think the fact of the matter is, we talk about it, it's always good to think about E15 rather than E10. It's good to think about not subsidizing the Argentine farmer, but the American farmer, if we're going to pay for this blending and trying to do it. So it does look like there's some possible good possibilities. There was sure a good chance. You know, we went up and made new highs in the December corn for the last 8 months, a high, and you know, the beans went back above 10.30 for a while, ended up closing, you know, closer to 10.20, but it did offer some opportunities to get a few more puts bought.
Yeah, and just one other note about the E15, that's already cleared the hurdle at EPA. That was done during the Obama administration, so that E15 can be used in all cars newer than 2000, I believe. E10 and all the rest of the cars, or all cars, I suppose, but E15 is available for vehicles that were made in the last 16 years, so that will be interesting to see how they deal with it. We had the jump. We had the fallback. Did it do anything technically in the marketplace? Do you think there'll be follow-through? Is it a one-time event and we're just waiting? Is it a buy the rumor, sell the fact? I'm just trying to figure out how you all see it.
Well, that's how it felt like today, Todd, was they bought the rumor. We got up so high, and it looked like it was then sell the fact because of it. I think that it's going to depend a lot on what goes on tonight, State of the Union address. If it's mentioned, and it's felt positive going in through it. I think we'll see some more buying continue. If it's not mentioned at all, I think it's going to hit the back burner for a while, and we're going to just go back into trading without the rumor, just looking at what we have. So then it will be sell the rumor. So, you know, it's awfully hard to say because, you know, we have to see what the speech says tonight before we can say which is the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you were watching for the day? I suppose this took up most of your time.
Well, you know, we are hearing that there's some problems on some of the roads getting the beans to the terminals in South America. They're awfully wet in some areas down there, and the roads aren't paved well, and we're hearing some talk of some delays that way. Argentina, I think, is the cheapest beans out there now, but we're in line right after them instead of Brazil for right now. But China's been awfully quiet for the meantime, and so, you know, we're sitting back waiting to see if we can get back into this bean market.
1 week from today, we'll be all at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm sure looking forward to that, too.
Yeah, I think that's going to be another great time. Just think with all this stuff to talk about and looking at what this may or may not produce by next week, it's going to offer some real opportunities to talk about what we can do for the spring in marketing.
Yeah, and we'll have the Farm Bill to take up. We'll have all of this to take up. We'll have the folks from here, Ag Econ guys, will be with us to take up agricultural policy. I can't hardly wait to see what they have to say about all of this, too, and to have you there. And that happens at the Beef House. Starts at 8 a.m. In the Central Time Zone, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone, and folks can come on out. It's just $30. Buy your tickets ahead of time on schedule at willag.org or 800-898-1000. So much to thank you for doing that program and all the programming over the year, Wayne Nelson. And we'll talk with you again over there at the Beef House next week.
Looking forward to seeing everybody again. Thanks, Todd.
And, of course, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Just one quick news story for the day. President Trump has issued an executive order that begins the process of rescinding or rewriting a controversial Clean Water Act regulation that would have given the government broad jurisdiction over land and water. The order directs the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to conduct a formal review of the waters of the United States, or WOTUS rule, which took effect August the 28th of 2015, and ostensibly was implemented to clarify the agency's authority over various waters. The jurisdiction, based on several U.S. Supreme Court decisions, had included navigable waters and waters with a significant hydrologic connection to navigable waters, but the regulation broadened that to include, among other water bodies, upstream waters and intermittent and ephemeral streams, such as the kind farmers use for drainage and irrigation. It also covered lands adjacent to such waters. Again, President Trump today issued an executive order that begins the process of rescinding WOTUS. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's continue our conversation now about the changes or rumored changes from the Trump administration that moved the market today as it related to the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard. Its implementation side can be tinkered with by the administration. Earlier in the day, I asked Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the U of I, to drop down to my office in Mumford Hall to have a quick discussion about this. You'll hear some excerpts from that. My first point of discussion with him was to remind him that on this day, 150 years ago, 1867, the University of Illinois was chartered.
Amazing.
150 years.
I am proud to be part of this place.
Absolutely. I know, and I know you're not saying that sarcastically. I think we're both.
No, I mean that sincerely. This is my dream job.
Mine too.
So we're both very, yeah. Very fortunate men.
You know, kind of fun. I looked at the markets today. Beans jumped 30 cents. Corn was up 14 to 15. Wheat up 12 to 14. It all happened based on a set of rumors that's coming out of Washington, D.C., the Trump administration, by executive order, I guess, at some point we'll see, may very well move the RINs market around a little bit, and this has to relate to where ethanol is blended. Can you tell me what's happening?
Well, as best as we know, we're all just dealing with rumor at this point. So I have seen nothing on paper except what's being reported over the wire services that I follow. So my comments will be based on my limited information. But what I know at this point from what's being reported is that, number one, that President Trump will issue an executive order that will change the point of obligation for the RFS from refiners and importers of transportation fuel to blenders of transportation fuel in the United States. And that's what Mr. Carl Icahn, one of Trump's advisors, has been after in a very public way for quite some time.
Now, he has a vested interest in this, I believe.
Yes, he's a major owner of a refinery, CVH?
Something along those lines. Yeah, I don't quite remember.
CVR, CVH.
I think it's CVR.
I think it is CVR, is right. Yeah. And his argument has been, Todd, that so-called merchant refiners, like the one that he has an ownership stake in, have been badly disadvantaged by the RFS because they have to buy these expensive RIN credits for compliance with the RFS, and that this is a huge cost to them, and it is really hurting their bottom line, particularly as RINs costs in recent years have risen with the price of RINs. That's his argument.
These are just a paper item.
That's right. The RINs themselves are simply the credits that obligated parties under the RFS must turn in to comply. And those RINs are created when a biofuel is manufactured. It's a number. And originally it was a 36-digit number. RIN stands for Renewable Identification Number, and it travels with the biofuel all the way to the consumer when it's finally used and extinguished. And so you have to turn in for compliance, if you're an obligated party, on an annual basis, a set number of these RIN credits, one credit per gallon. And Mr. Icahn's argument is, since his refining operation doesn't have any upstream blending assets, that he doesn't have any way to obtain the RIN credits by blending.
And so he has to buy them on the open market.
Exactly.
So he buys the ID, the RIN, on the open market to prove that, yes, when I shipped, it did, in fact, have a gallon or E10 or ethanol, biofuel, whatever it happens to be in the final product.
But the tricky part is the way this program was set up is, you know, his company literally never blends.
Right.
Even though it is truly a blend mandate. It's a blending mandate. You
right.
have to have so much of this in the final fuel that consumers consume.
And he can say he blends by buying.
That's exactly
right.
How the program is designed.
And the mandate. And so so they're there so that when you have a company like Icahn's, it can go ahead and buy it. Say, yes, I met the mandate because somebody else overproduced and I was able to buy their extra RINs, relatively speaking.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So that's how it works in a mechanical sense.
And so he's been a big supporter of moving this somewhere else down the line. Will it work?
No, he's dead wrong. And it's unusual for an economist to be this certain, but I am absolutely certain on making that statement. And the reasoning is very simple. Let me put it to you this way, Todd. We already have a lot of experience with gasoline taxes. Our current system levies the sales taxes on gasoline at the retail level, right? And so the firms where you pull up to pump your gas, they have to pay a tax for the gallons that you buy. Now, do they just say, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money, you know, 40, 50 cents in gas taxes, whatever it is, and we're just going to absorb it and it'll drop our bottom line? No. What do they do, Todd? There's a word the economists have. It's called pass-through. They raise the retail price to offset the sales taxes that are collected from those firms. But who's really paying the tax? Todd is raising his hand right now, and I'm raising my hand. Consumers, of course we pay for it. It's passed through ultimately to the consumer. RINs work exactly the same way. Mr. Icahn's company has to buy those RINs. And yes, it does. It shows up as an expense on his refiner's income statement. No doubt about that. But what we know, what does economics predict? And you don't have to have market power to do this. It's just in a competitive market. Then that firm wouldn't survive, presumably, if they didn't raise the prices for the petroleum gasoline feedstock that they sell out of the pipes of their refiners. And so they raise the price in order to offset the RINs that they're buying, and their bottom line margin is unaffected, except for administrative costs that are involved with the compliance aspects of the RFS. Otherwise, it's a wash. So now, if you move the point of compliance, what you should see is Mr. Icahn's refinery, the RIN expense will go off the income statement, but he'll also be selling at a lower price his petroleum feedstock. And so it's a wash, except for those administrative costs, which it's hard to imagine that those are really huge.
But doesn't he think he'll sell more of his gallons because of this?
Well, he may, but he's not going to.
Why not?
Because basically it has to do with the demand for gasoline is extremely inelastic in the short run in the United States, which means that the quantity effects of all this are very, very small. And so this is not just one, you know, academic economist spouting this off. So the logic of what I've explained, I think most people can understand, which is a RIN is to that refiner is a tax. It is. Nobody's going to argue with that. What happens with taxes in a supply chain? They're like a hot potato. They will get passed on ultimately to the consumer. And we have very good empirical research right now that shows, excuse me, that that's exactly what happens, Todd. A colleague that I know of at Harvard, James Stock, has a paper that very rigorously examines this issue and shows that, yeah, it works pretty much like your intuition would say.
Could this have an impact on the ethanol producer in any way?
No.
Same thing for them. Doesn't matter where this gets taxed.
Everything just shuffles around. The prices will adjust. There can be a little short-term dislocation as people try to figure out a new system. There can be some small impacts based upon market position and where your particular assets are located, you know, in a logistical sense. But these are small impacts in the overall system.
And it won't, as some have argued, make it more difficult to manage the RINs themselves?
Well, now that to me is the really interesting point of where this is going is exactly how are you, they going to define a blender instead of a refiner. A refiner is pretty easy to identify. It's a huge plant. You know, you can't hide a refinery, right? But exactly who's a blender when you have a pipeline system, and exactly that will be interesting to see how they thread that needle. But I presume that it can be done. My prediction is that this will actually make the administrative cost of complying with the RFS overall for the U.S. economy more expensive. I don't see how you can have fewer obligated parties and fewer people trying to comply under a blender point of obligation. But essentially, that's the only impact that this particular part of the announcement should have.
Okay, so there were three things, all rumored until something else happens, that are moving the market for the day. The first is where that blender tax / possibility will happen, moving it out of the refinery to someplace else. The second is that part of the deal may or may not be that the administration will push E15. I suppose that certainly could be good for the corn market over the long run. And then the third part, which I think you find most interesting and that you talked about last year in 2016, is the tax credit for biodiesel and qualifying it as a U.S.-only tax credit. Is that the big one?
That's the big one, Todd, if it's a part of the deal. I have not seen that confirmed, but what we know is that biofuels and ag interest have been pushing hard on that conversion, very hard. Senator Grassley first introduced that in the summer of 2015, and he didn't get it done when the biodiesel tax credit was extended. A larger group has come back to try to get that conversion accomplished. I talked to, after the election, I think you and I had talked, and I thought this would be something that people should be on their radar because it would be very attractive to President Trump, given his America First orientation. So probably helpful to explain, how does the biodiesel tax credit work right now? It's expired right now, but it's probably going to be reinstated. It always is. The way it has worked in the past is that, intriguingly enough, that is a blender credit. So we've got things going in opposite directions here. And that means that blenders can, as long as they're blending a gallon of biodiesel into petroleum diesel, they can get a $1 per gallon tax credit to offset the cost of blending the higher priced biodiesel. But here's the interesting part of that is it doesn't matter where it comes from. Since it's a blender credit, you can get the biodiesel from the United States biodiesel producer or from anyone outside the U.S. And with the burgeoning advanced mandate, we have been sucking in biodiesel imports at a really rapidly growing rate, particularly in 2016. I have got to get the final numbers when they're in, but it's going to be huge. So, basically the marginal gallon to comply with the RFS, Todd, has been coming from Argentina recently because of the way the tax credit works. That's what's been happening. And so this proposal, and if it's true, would then make the tax credit only, it has to be produced on U.S. soil to be eligible for that tax credit, which means effectively it would put Argentine and any other biodiesel producers at a $1 per gallon price disadvantage, which would be very hard to overcome And so this is, I think that what the market's reacting to is probably two things. One is the potential for this conversion to a tax credit, if that's what's going to happen, because that means that based on what's happened in the past, that compliance for the advanced component of the RFS and the part of the ethanol mandate above the blend wall just got a lot more expensive. And then secondly, and something that I've been arguing since the election, I think the market is waking up to the fact this is going to be a huge shock, and it's a support. The Trump administration is not going to touch the RFS. They're going to support biofuels, which is what I have always thought would be their natural position. And there's a lot of people that have been building positions into the RINs market and into grain markets, basically having a bearish view on what might happen with RFS reform, with Icahn and Pruitt being the point people in the RFS. And that's another key point in this. As it's being reported, what we're seeing, it's very important. I see headlines saying RFS reform. It is not RFS reform. RFS reform requires the U.S. Congress to change the legislation. That obviously is not happening. And you cannot change the legislation by executive order. All you can do is change some features of related to the implementation of the RFS. And that's basically all that's going on.
Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. I'm sure we will probably be talking more about this in future days.
I am positive that is the case. Scott Irwin, of course, is an agricultural economist here at the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh boy, I hope you picked up those tickets by now. If not, they're still available for the All-Day Ag Outlook a week from today at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is $30. You can do that online at willag.org or at 800-898-1065. Let's talk now about the weather forecast. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about what's happening in South America for the moment.
Well, last week when we talked, we were talking about Argentina being a little bit drier. And while there still are some dry areas, and there will be, especially in the central and southern areas, some of the more key growing areas of the north and northeast look to have some decent chance of precipitation, a little more wet there. In the next 5 or 6 days, Brazil looking a little bit more wet as well. Rainfall there is going to be a little bit more consistent, but while Argentina gets a little more wet next week, southern and central Brazil gets a little drier.
And then if you come back here to the United States, what do you see for us?
Well, in the Midwest, we are going to leave February and head into March with some changing weather. First of all, we've had some real mild weather, as we know. This is going to be one of the warmest Februarys in a long time across the lower 48, and we are going to start at least here the next 48 hours pretty warm, but we also see a system coming up, and it does look wet. Much of the Corn Belt will be looking at some shower activity, the Eastern Corn Belt, some thunderstorms. By Wednesday, though, do expect a pretty significant cool down. I think by the time the colder air comes in, the threat of snow will be gone. But certainly some colder temperatures are coming for the second half of the week and the weekend.
And anything else around the planet that we ought to discuss, or did we get to the main points for the day?
Well, I think we got to the main points. I think as we get into March and April, I do think it's going to be a busy next 60 days with lots of wild ups and downs like you normally do in an early spring or season.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Don Day with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. A couple of notes. Do visit our website. You'll find the whole of the interview we did with Scott Irwin. It's 18 minutes long, not the 11 minutes that you heard on the air this afternoon. And there's a lot of good information about RINs there posted at willag.org. And you can buy your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook. It is just 1 week away now over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you didn't think there was a reason to go before, there certainly is now. So get your tickets today, willag.org. The cost is just $30. We'll have a dozen of our regular on-air analysts, and we'll take up farm policy, and I'm positive we'll get to this RFS as well with the folks from the Gardner Policy Program here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, including Gary Schnitke and Jonathan Kappas, Nick Paulson as well. Should be a great day. Tickets, again, are just $30. Includes your morning coffee and roll from the Beef House meal at the noon hour, and the whole day. We kick off at 8 a.m. in the Central Time Zone. We'll wrap up around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Should be a fantastic day, whether you're on this side of the border or the Indiana side of the border. Please do come on out. Again, you can do that in two ways. Tickets online, willag.org. That's easiest for us, probably for you as well. Or you can call 800-898-1065.